Greetings and welcome to this edition of the MERS Monday podcast. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the boss, John Roering, Jack Spencer, and Mike Malott. A little later in the program, Scott DeAndis, state representative from the 110th District, will be joining us. You know, guys, I'm taking a look at the committee hearings for this week, and Jack, your favorite bill is up. That's the frog hunting bill. There's a term for that, though, isn't there? What is that called, the taking of frogs?
Is it frog gigging?
Gigging. Yeah. Have you hunted frogs before?
No. Except when you're a kid and you're trying to catch them with your hand. But
you know, people go out there with spears and get these things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're... I've seen frog spears.
Have you really?
The thing that you put on the end. Yeah, they have them with... Or they used to have them with sports.
Seems like catching it with a net would be easier, though. Wouldn't it?
In the interest of good order, I move that we leapfrog this issue and go on to no fault.
That's kind of punny. We haven't even explained what the frog bill is. This would allow us to hunt frogs in the nighttime with a lamp and a spear.
I don't want to hunt frogs in the nighttime. That's just not something.
With a spear?
This could catch on. Or anything.
This could catch on. This could be big.
I heard once you've done it once, you never give up on it afterwards. It's addictive.
It becomes like a lifestyle thing.
Yeah, it's like a lifestyle
thing.
It's
very riveting.
Oh, that's what we were looking for. Riveting. Well, it's in committee this week, and it's already passed the Senate, and it's hopefully going to leap out of committee this coming Wednesday and land in the House.
All I can say is it's about time.
I mean, how many people have been inconvenienced because they're not able to go out?
Oh, probably, maybe 8 or 9. I guess 10 maybe, possibly 10.
Yeah, you're up at least 10%.
Maybe even more.
I mean, this could be a new thing. I mean, instead of kids playing video games, they could be out with spears in the nighttime.
I think they would actually probably rather enjoy a video game of spearing frogs at night.
Kind of like
frogs. They actually enjoy doing it.
I think I'd rather have my kids just doing video games at the nighttime than with a headlamp and a spear. Because I think my daughter could spear my brother.
If the video game is of her, her actually spearing frogs on her phone.
Yeah, because at least she isn't going to accidentally spear my foot if we're out there.
All right, we've sufficiently stuck this issue. So
I have a feeling that this frog bill is probably going to move a lot faster than no fault.
It might.
It's
probably got more legs than no fault.
Yeah.
The no fault. Why?
No fault has more moving parts than frogs.
Just the legs are just long.
Yeah. Why isn't it going any? Why is no fault so hard? Why is this issue so hard, guys?
Because it's a perfect issue to hate, which is exactly what I said last week.
Because it's got too many moving parts?
You've got the government telling the private sector what to do, which means conservative Republicans are going to hate it. You've got a cut in benefits, which means Democrats are going to hate it. I mean, how do you get to the middle where we got enough people that actually want to do something?
So then nothing gets done? Is this just a perfect issue to campaign on as opposed to do anything with, Jack?
Oh, it's an issue where I'm always amazed at the people when they run and they run on something like this and say, I'm going to do something about this issue, as if one person could go to the legislature and make all the difference in the world on an issue like this. And it's just, we've got to do something about this. This is something we've got to tackle. It's that perfect campaign issue that you can come back year after year and say the same thing.
So does that mean nothing gets done, Mike?
Something will get done.
You think so?
That's
because he's new in town, so he thinks that something's going to get done.
He's still optimistic something will get done. Let me qualify that.
Okay.
I think something gets passed. Whether or not it does anything is another matter.
Okay.
But there's a lot of bills now with the Leonard package, and now we've got Frederick's coalition. So there's a lot of pieces in there, and, something can pass and we'll claim victory and we'll move on to the next thing. Whether or not it actually gets something done to address raids is another question.
So does that mean then that we would be satisfied with things that everyone could agree with? Let's say some type of fraud authority and letting folks who are on Medicare opt out of getting the full catastrophic claims association fees.
If you could get something like that, it would be somewhat of an accomplishment. Being satisfied with it, no.
No, and so that's kind of my point then. So I think part of the problem with this issue has been kind of an all or nothing type of mentality.
So you're saying we need to pull one string at a time.
It could be that ends up being what happens.
Two strings a year until we're actually got something accomplished.
Correct. I mean, could that be where this ends up going? Maybe. I mean, because if we want to get, if the legislature does indeed want to get something done, there is a path. You're right, Mike. There is a path that you can get something done. There is enough agreement on certain issues that you can put together something that would satisfy nobody, but it's an accomplishment that something were to get done.
Well, it would be a tweak, yes. There are things they could do that would marginally improve the system. And you might have agreement on that it marginally improves the system, but it's like one-tenth or less of the whole overall problem. I mean, with all the different interests involved that are opposite each other, you know, to be able to even do 1/10 or 5% of some kind of reform, you know, maybe that's an accomplishment.
I've always been curious why the debate, and maybe you guys can help me on this, why the debate has never really centered around crime in Detroit. Like, why has that never been just kind of put out there? I mean, one of the reasons why insurance rates are so high in the city of Detroit is because of car theft.
Well, you back up about, I think, 7 or 8 years ago, there was a task force that looked at it. I think it used to be a demographer by the name of Metzger actually looked at that issue. And one of the reports they came out with, I think, really highlighted that. So, I mean, you need to go back. I think there has been a look at, does the auto theft rate that is experienced in Detroit play into the rates that Detroit plays? And I think they indicated clearly that there was. Now, I don't remember what came out of that report, but I vaguely remember that. You need to check. We should check that.
One of the points about that came up in committee. It's called redlining, and it's really not redlining. It's territorial rating, and it's because one area experiences higher levels of crime than another area, and the insurance companies, and with the legislature's backing, have said that, you know, that loss experience that you have in that area is a valid way of setting rates. So it's called redlining, but it's really not. Is it unfair? You're living in an area that's got a high crime rate that maybe does play into your rates. So how do you resolve that? It is a function of the neighborhood that you live in. There are other factors that really don't have much to do with the rates that you're setting. Those are the ones that the legislature has raised, but will they really address those? Like, does your credit rating really play into your auto rates?
But Jack, why don't folks talk about that more? Why don't we hear more about that in the legislature? Why don't we hear Mayor Duggan talking more about the fact that we got to get a handle on car thefts?
Well, what's he going to do? Now he's just turned the bright light focusing back on himself on something he probably doesn't have the power to really control. He's going to shine the light back on himself and say, gee, you know, we've got to take care of this crime stuff. Well, gee, that's a bigger task in the long run than doing a no-fault reform. To try to get a handle on that, that's a multi-decade problem.
Because you can't pass a bill to eliminate crime in Detroit. I mean, that's much more of a systemic, long-term project that you have to do as far as investment in local governments and investment in local police forces.
Well, who hasn't been trying to get rid of crime in Detroit?
Sure.
Who hasn't been trying to crack down on that? And, you know, I just think that's there's no incentive, I would think, for someone like Mayor Duggan to say, we've got to get a handle on this. He probably would say that every time anyway. It doesn't mean they're going to be able to get a handle on it. You know, another issue with this, and I've heard this in the hallways of the Capitol, is once the driving around without insurance in these districts where it's, you know, such high crime rates, once that becomes generational, how used do people get to doing that? And regardless of what you do, are they going to be coming back and buying insurance?
Because you got to break a habit now. A habit that my dad did and my grandpa did, and that's just how we do things. We just drive around, and when we have to renew our tabs.
If you got along without something, you know how human nature is.
Yes.
If you get along without something and, hey, I never missed this, you know, or something like that. There's a lot of dynamics of this thing. Insurance itself, the idea of auto insurance is complex enough. And then years ago, when we tossed the catastrophic claims on top of it and added that cherry on top, I just think we created a situation where, boy, it's really hard to handle all these different interests and please them.
Okay, so let me, while John's still looking up this report, I want to throw out a suggestion and get the temperature here. Here's a potential compromise, and I don't know if any side would do this, but one of the problems here is the idea of personal injury protection choice. As opposed to doing everybody getting full and complete catastrophic coverage if we had different levels, right? But if you get the lowest level, Jack, all right, let's say you get the $250,000 level, and Mike hits you, and he's got full and complete everything, and he puts you in a wheelchair. You run your cap all the way through, and now you're into, like, you know, burning through your assets territory right now. You can't go back and sue Mike because we have no fault, right?
Right.
But what happens if we allow you to sue Mike because he's got better coverage than you?
Well, it becomes like other states.
Right.
Yeah, that's not no fault anymore.
Now, we're not talking no fault, but you're exactly right. What if we add that as an incentive to get folks together? What if we try and become more like other states as opposed to us being special and unique and fun?
Well, the other side of the argument is, why would I buy full coverage if that just makes me a target for lawsuits? Why don't I just save my rates and I'll buy the lower level and then I'll sue whoever hits me?
Well, that's exactly what people are going to do.
But see, the reason you get full coverage is because if Jack turns around and sues you, you're covered then, right? Then you already have the insurance. It's not any skin off your back. It's off the insurance company who decided to insure you.
But if I don't have the coverage, they can't sue me because I'm not a wealthy guy, so there's nothing there to sue me for, you know?
Well, I mean, you could say that, but you would have the comfort of knowing that, hey, well, I've got full and complete, so go ahead and deal with State Farm or Allstate or whatever. You don't have to worry about me because I'm fully covered. I mean, you would still have that security of knowing you were taken care of.
Yeah, that's an argument to be made, but I can see where there's going to be a counter argument to this as well.
Well, that's going to be the whole CPAN thing and the whole idea that, you know, we shouldn't be like other states and we got to have everybody covered. And you got the attorneys and them weighing in. And again, you know, it's like there aren't enough interests that are after the same thing on this issue. I think there's so many of them that are counter each other that, you know, you almost would have to have some kind of complete control of the process situation. And just sort of, you know, just this is what we're going to do and we've got the power to do it. That's the only way it's ever going to be changed. And I just don't think that's the way legislature is ever likely to work.
That runs very much counter to the Republican philosophy of a free market. You start mandating, and that's exactly what the Republicans don't want and say we shouldn't have.
Or is it more Republican to not mandate everybody have insurance and let the free market work? And if you get in a car accident, you screw yourself. And it's all on you. But then the person who gets injured can't get anything out of you, Mike, because, you know, what do you have to offer? It's not like you got $1 million in the bank or something, unless there's something I don't know.
Something, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. I guess my point is that being special, having our own system, comes at a cost. And either we're going to continue to be special and pay that high cost, or we're going to be like other states and pay what other states pay. I guess that's kind of the point that I'm
Well, I think
at.
That is the point. I think the fact that we're special, and people want to say we're, you know, I think now it's, is it 20% almost over the nearest, the second most expensive state? You know, we're paying a cost for it. But again, who's paying it?
We are.
But is it everyone in the state that's paying it?
The people who are paying insurance.
Yes.
Which gets us back to John's study, which he did find.
The research department is in. It was a 2004 study that was done by Wayne State University's Kurt Metzger, who's also a longtime expert in terms of demographic data. And what he found was auto insurance rates in Detroit, Flint, and other municipalities have been a hot political topic for Detroit lawmakers. I'm reading out of MERS now. Governor Jennifer Granholm and the Office of Financial Insurance Services Commissioner Linda Waters, an old name.
But basically what he found was that the losses, he said, the losses justify the premiums. The theft, the other losses that were experienced in those areas justified the rates that were being charged. Whether that's true today or not anymore, I don't know. But it would certainly be interesting to talk to Mr. Metzger and sort of see if he can do a similar analysis.
We'll see if... We interrupt this podcast for a great...
For a little mermaid.
All right. Well, we'll kick it now to our interview here with Scott Neander.
Come on, 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 come on. Lady, kiss the frog.
Joining us now for the podcast is the state representative from the 110th District. He's Scott Deanda. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you. Good to be here.
We just finished with a House session, a very somber occasion, a final memory memorial for John Kivala. Family came down today, the presentation of the flag. Just wanted to get your impressions, first of all, of this event today.
Well, it's a sad day because we all lost a good friend and colleague with Representative Kivala. The family were here. We were glad to honor them and honor John's memory, because he always was there to fight for the UP along with all the rest of us Upers. He's going to be always missed. He's always going to be in our hearts, because he always had a good thing to talk about. It was called bipartisanship, getting stuff done, coming together, putting differences aside. So he is very much missed by myself and Senator Casperson. We'll always think about him.
Looking ahead, and I know it's very hard to look ahead under the circumstances, but obviously the 109th, we do have a special election. It's going to be taking place in less than a month now, 3 weeks or so. Wanted to get your impression on how that's going to end up in your prediction.
Well, before 1957, it always was a Republican seat. But after that, Dominic Jacobetti got in there, and he kept at a Democratic seat right up until Representative Kivala, and I just don't see it changing. You know, the demographics of the district, they're very heavy for Democrats. Biggest population areas in the city of Marquette and Marquette County, largest landmass in the state of Michigan, along with the most people in the UP. So I really think that, you know, the outlying areas, I have a hard time when I hear a lot of the chatter out there about changing it to a Republican seat. And I think some of the big things that has happened in our state, you know, with the right to work, with the nurses strike in Marquette, along with the civil service going against state of Michigan employees on bargaining, you know, and the teachers, they've got a new pension system. It's called a 401k. So all of those folks in the 109th district, I'm sure, are starting to scratch their head if this is really the path that we're going to take to go down into another representative that may want to be a Republican. I don't see a lot of folks up there wanting to support that. I think that there's been a lot of talk, too, about how this Sarah Cambenzi, who is our candidate for the district, is, you know, very liberal. Well, she got a voting record out of the city council watching everybody's money, so she's kind of cut out of the same cloth like me, being fiscally and conservative down here with people's money. And I know there's been a lot of chatter about the Second Amendment, and she's not for guns. Well, I've been around with her, and I'll tell you what, every time that we're out, it's all about people's freedom and rights. Second Amendment's dear to her heart, just like it is mine.
So you've done a little campaigning in the 109th then?
I certainly have. I've been going all over, and I've been making sure that people understand there's four counties in the 109th district. They're going to be served just like I served the 110th. Every one of those outlying communities are going to be taken care of with that Sarah Cambenzi.
Obviously, you have an eye toward the Senate district as well while you're out there, and I wanted to get your sense on where the voters are up there in relationship to Trump and the national environment right now. What are they thinking?
Well, I think all the people that I visit with in the 12 counties are tired of this tweeting and all of this nonsense that's going on out of the White House. I mean, I think everybody that runs for public office got good intentions for the people and the citizens, but there's a lot of folks that get caught up in trying to create a political buzz. And to be able to have our people hearing a lot of this nonsense about wars and taking on this and that, I think people are getting sick of it. And I think the other thing that's really been, you know, front and center for a lot of us too is just, you know, we're talking about, you know, being transparent. And then we've been having a lot of discussions up there about what happened in Washington when the governor was asked about this Flint situation. And it just seems like everybody got amnesia now when it comes to the dates and the times and what happened. So I think our folks are really getting tired of it, Kyle. I mean, people want somebody that's going to stand up and be heard, and they're going to voice our opinion down here, whether it's Lansing or D.C. And you know, it's just unfortunate that, you know, the leadership. We talk about a lot of these issues statewide, and it comes down to leadership. We got a lot of people running for public office. They're good people. Sometimes they just vote for bad leaders, and they got bad issues. And I think that that's going to have an impact on these future elections because people are upset. And our area up there is pretty much an independent area of the state of Michigan. And they want results, and they want to see people that are standing up and telling them what it really is and not looking at a calendar to figure out what dates are, whether they said something.
Well, and that's, you kind of touched on something I wanted to bring up, and that's the makeup, the kind of the partisan makeup of the UP. The trend line would seem to indicate that it's going more Republican. What do you kind of read on the past results on governor and president?
Well, I don't know. Governor and president, I mean, you know, I was kind of in that microcosm up there with seven counties on the West End. I mean, my district's 50-50. Last election with President Trump winning it and General Bergman winning the congressional, I did both a lot better than both of them. I got 62.5 in a Republican area, so I'm a Democrat. But I tell you what, I go out and I talk to everybody. I don't care if they're from the far left or the far right. I get invited all over, and we tell them actually what it is. We don't beat around the issues. And I meet with everybody, Tea Party, Sierra Club, whoever invites us, we go and we sit down and have a cup of coffee, and we talk about the issues so they know where I stand when I walk out.
You're even on the Trucker Randy Bishop show, which I don't know if there's many Democrats who've been on that show.
I always get teased about that by my good friend Wayne Schmidt up there in Traverse City, but you know what? They call, they wanted something, that you want somebody to have a good, honest discussion. I tell them how I feel. I'm telling them how the people up in the UP talk about it, too. Because right. We're pretty much not playing this bipartisan. We're playing strictly bipartisan. We're not talking about one side being bad, the other side being good. We talk about the issues, and I tell them how it is, because that's our UP perspective. We call it as we see it.
Let's talk. Last thing I want to talk about is the big issue going on right now in the House is obviously the no-fault auto insurance reform proposal. I wanted to get your impression of the proposal.
Well, my impression in looking at the bill and reading through the 77 pages is that where is the true savings going to be? You know, we're all about saving money in the UP. We're struggling with high cost of propane and all these extra fees and taxes that got thrown on us here in the last 4 or 5 years, and the car insurance front and center. We're paying the most we are in the state of Michigan for power. Our energy costs are 27 cents a kilowatt. So that bill comes in, the next bill comes in is the car insurance. People see this. And I think that everybody up there would like to see a financial change with the price going down. But the thing that's on their mind is, number one, what kind of services are we going to get if we change? And I think that's the biggest people our folks are talking about and they understand. If you got $100,000 on a house for fire insurance and we're paying $500 a year, you're paying $170 per car, and if something happens, you're taken care of forever. So, I mean, that's the stretch. That's what we're facing up there. I think one of the biggest things that people are starting to realize is the fact that we all get a little bit nervous up north when we start seeing some of these ambulance chasers and swindlers standing up there proposing some of these things. And I think that, you know, it didn't do us any justice with 1-800-SAM standing up there because people kind of get a little leery about that too. So, you know, I'm hoping to see one thing in the discussion. We all put that $21 billion in that kitty, and that's what they're sitting on. And
I'll tell you, the Catastrophic Claims Association.
That's correct, and that's our money. We all paid into it. And if some change is made, that rebate should be coming to us. Or they should keep the fund in there where we're not going to have to keep paying on it. But that's what happens when you don't have true government oversight of those funds. And that's the problem that a lot of my people are saying. Where is that money? That's our money. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the big discussion that I see. And I'm hoping that we have a good discussion on this because it has been going on for a long time.
So if you had to say if there was one thing that you would like to see out of a auto insurance reform, is it that we get a good idea of what exactly that money in the Catastrophic Claims Fund is for and if we need all of that money?
And that's the one thing I learned down here in the last 5 years. It's all about the money. It's all about the money on the kitchen table when you're trying to pay the bills. That's number one in my issue. That $21 billion is our money. We should know how it's invested. We should know how that money is going to get paid out. And in the end, where is that money going? And they had, that should have the oversight of the state of Michigan Treasury that was set up in the wrong way. That's the people's money. It should have been having the oversight of the legislature in the hands of the Treasury in a lockbox, because that's the problem we got now.
Do you have any opinions on offering different levels of personal injury protection, this PIP choice?
Well, I do. I mean, people got to realize one thing. You want the Cadillac plan, you pay for it, and that's going to take care of you. If we're going to have the Chevrolet plan out there, you got, it comes with a price. Once that money is burnt up in the hospital, that's the end of it.
Yeah.
People got to, this is a moral and personal question. You got kids, you got to take care of them. You're not going to be able to if you look at this plan. Mm-hmm. You know, and for us to be able to look at kicking this to the federal government to put them on Medicaid and Medicare, that doesn't make much sense to me either, because we're still paying for that. It kicks it right back to the state level. Yeah. We're all going to pay for it in the end.
All right, very good. Thank you for taking time with us. Scott DeAnda from the 110th District. Thank you.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to our Representative DeAnda for being with us on the podcast. John, Jack, and Mike. Thank you also to AT&T for sponsoring this and all our other podcasts. Why do you have the Little Mermaid as a ringtone? Do you like the Little Mermaid?
No, I like steel drums, though.
Is that steel drums?
Yeah.
What? Is that the ringtone?
Yeah, that's the ringtone. Steel drums playing. I know it was played in The Little Mermaid, but it was also played in some other movies, too. So I think in the Beetlejuice, the end of Beetlejuice.
I don't know.
Closing the song in the Beetlejuice.
That's a long time ago.
I've never seen it.
Oh, Jack, you're missing out.
It just sounded very nostalgic.
It sounded kind of fun. Sounded good. John's changing his ringtone now.
I know, I was wondering somebody from Phoenix, Arizona, called me up 5 minutes ago.
Oh, all right. Well, we'll let John get that phone call. Till next week, I'm Kyle Williams. Take care.